You know what? I think, yeah, we've got Ken coming right online here right now. So I'm going to bring him up and bring him right on.
Good morning. You're on Tech Talk.
Yeah, this is Ken Stieglitz calling in, the guest for today. How are you?
Oh, very good, Ken. Thanks. This is Michael Kassler, and we've got Dave Sparky Saganaki across from me.
I dropped
you right on the board here, as a matter of fact.
You're on the air.
Oh, okay. Thanks for telling me.
So,
good to be here.
Fantastic. We're really excited to have you on, Ken. Well, why don't you first just tell us a little bit about who you are and about why you're on the book Snipers, Shills, and Sharks: eBay and Human Behavior.
Sure. Well, I'm a professor of computer science at Princeton University and did ancient coins as a hobby, I suppose you might call it, but it was more of an obsession. But finding ancient coins in the United States is hard. You can't dig them up, and people generally don't find Roman and Greek coins in their backyards. And generally, people are not that aware of Roman and Greek pieces of garbage in the ground.
Yeah.
So it was a hard job for a long time, and eBay completely blasted that open and completely changed the market for low-end ancient coins. I used to have to wait 2 months for a mimeographed sheet from some guy working out of a garage in Georgia or something. And it just, I could sit in my study and look at hundreds and hundreds of things. And I'm talking about coins for $10, $20, $30 that would give me great joy in researching. And I said to myself, well, this is the way computers have changed my life, and I should look into it professionally.
Yep.
And I started getting interested in how internet auctions work and what auction theory was. And I started a grad seminar, met an economist, and we started saying, well, why does eBay work so well? Why aren't there 10 competing sites? Or why don't you pay your price? Why do you pay your second price? And so on.
Yep.
So we started asking lots of questions. Why is eBay so successful? What are the roots, the theoretical roots behind eBay? How did this happen? How does it work the way it does?
Well, and I think the point you just brought up is something that I know was not something I had given a lot of thought of before I had read your book, is specifically the second price auction model and how that's different from what we're kind of led to expect. I mean, when you go on eBay, you're kind of led to believe this is similar to, an English outcry auction, which is the one we're probably most familiar with, watching on TV and so on. Or perhaps, if you think about it at all, or read eBay's description of it, that it's somewhat similar to a sealed bid first price auction. In reality, it's quite different from that.
No, exactly. That's exactly so. In fact, the most obvious way to run an auction on the Internet, the most naive way, would be to say, well, bid, and we'll post the highest bid. When everybody's done, you pay what you bid and you're done.
Yeah.
It would be like Christie's or Sotheby's online. And that's not the way it works. And however, it's in eBay's interest and the seller's interest, actually, to make it seem as if it's an online outcry auction. So, in fact, it's a very clever manipulation of what was originally called a Vickrey auction, the second price auction. And, in fact, it goes back to two Nobel Prizes, where Vickrey won the Nobel Prize in 1996. He wrote a paper in 1961 in which he proposed this second price auction for various theoretical reasons. And it also, relies on some work by John Nash, who won the Nobel Prize in 1994. So we have at least, and there's been recent work, so there's lots of high-power thinking behind what looks like a very, very simple concept. It's elusively simple. It's,
yeah. Yeah, and you mentioned John Nash, of course, and you talk a lot about Nash and Nash equilibriums in your book. And please correct me if I ever misstate myself here. My knowledge is basically based upon your book. So, it's my mistake and not yours. But an equilibrium state for an auction means that the person with the highest value for the item is the one who ends up with the item at the end of the day. And that's not always, you know, something that occurs in these auctions. And it occurs to me that it's perhaps not what eBay itself would shoot for in its best interest. Because as you mentioned, you know, they want to attract the largest number of bidders, but also to the highest price for items and the largest sellers.
Right.
You know, how does an equilibrium state for especially an online auction, you know, is it always something to be desired, or is it not necessarily you know, in the best interest of one party or another?
Ah, okay. Well, you raise a number of related questions, and they're all interesting, and it's not so simple.
Well, that's usually I am quite simple. I unfortunately.
Well, I think that
two cups of coffee this morning, and I think I know something. You know.
Well, you know, the message here is that things aren't always as simple as they seem, and people often bid very naively on eBay. They say, well. In fact, eBay leads you by the nose. They say, well, put in the highest value you're willing, the highest price you're willing to pay, and just relax, because
yeah.
We have this proxy system, and we'll up the bid and so on. And, of course, that encourages other people to bid, and so what they're doing is creating an environment in which a bidding war takes place, which is exactly what you want to avoid. The idea of actually when the person with the highest value always wins the item in an auction, that's called an efficient auction. When we're in equilibrium, this refers to the kind of strategies we take. If you're in equilibrium, it means that if a group of bidders are in equilibrium, it means that no one can improve his or her particular strategy by deviating from that particular strategy.
Yes, okay, that makes sense. So basically, if you're in equilibrium, everyone's doing the best action for themselves. But if it's efficient, that means that the person with the highest value is then obtaining the item.
Exactly. And the relationship between these concepts, you know, has been worked out mathematically. But the what economists tell us about eBay really depends a lot on the particular mathematical model or construct you use. And if you say, well, everybody has a value and they know their value, and this is a very idealized picture, and you can say things about, well, if everybody knows his value, then okay, then you just bid your value and go away and relax and you don't have to worry. But in fact, people don't really behave that way. So it's the deviations from the ideal model that have occupied economists for the last 20, 30 years with people very interested in behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another side, the other side of the coin, so to speak. Not only does economic theory and auction theory tell us a lot about, let's say, what could be happening on eBay, but eBay is beginning to tell economists more about their own theories of how people behave. So it works both ways. There's a lot of interesting research going on right now in which economists are looking at what people do on eBay, you know, and it's a very transparent site, largely transparent. So it's an enormous gold mine of data.
Yeah. I guess that's an interesting side thing too. I made a note to myself. I love in your book you mentioned that there's the the assumed class of people, Homo economicus, who basically always make decisions that are in their enlightened self-interest. And of course, you know, using that as a base assumption for, you know, making some conclusions on policy and eBay and what your best actions are in eBay, not necessarily is correct all the time. Do you think that using those as assumptions impact your conclusions negatively, or, you know, does the anecdotal evidence that you see on eBay kind of bear out all of that, that you can make these extrapolations and come out somewhere near to to an end result that's what you would expect or that you do see?
Well, the kind of conclusions in research and auctions are yes and no, partly the case and partly not the case. For example, I mean, what people tend to study on eBay in terms of behavior are things like this. The people tend to take full account of shipping costs. In other words, if somebody is charging $10 for shipping and the opening bid is $10, that means you can't get into the auction for less than $20.
Yep.
You got to commit $20 to get in. But it could be that they have an opening bid of $19.99 and a penny shipping or free shipping and so on. And so you'd think that if you take into account shipping the same way you take into account other money, that in fact the behavior would be equivalent. So people love to study things like that. And in fact, they come out with conclusions that say, well, no, people tend to forget a little bit about shipping costs. So that if you're a seller, well, maybe you should inch up the shipping costs a little bit, squeeze an extra dollar or two on the average out of. So that's the sort of things that happen. But people are behavior are affected in gross ways by things that happen. For example, generally bidders don't like secret reserves. You know, in eBay you can say, well, there's a secret reserve. I'm not telling you what it is, but you're not going to get it for less than that. And then what eBay does is entice you to bid. It says, well, the reserve is not met, so people inch up and bid $5, $10, $15, and so just to find out what the secret reserve is.
Kind of poking their poking their big toe into the water further and further to really see how deep the pool goes.
Exactly, but then you find out, well, having a secret reserve may turn bidders off. So you know, if you want to sell something, maybe it's not such a good idea to have a secret reserve. So you can study all these things, you know, in great detail because you've got this ocean, you know, you've got this goldfish bowl full of people swimming around, and you can watch them all day and all night.
Well, and that's kind of an interesting question too, though, is you know how do you do research using eBay? You mentioned that the eBay system is transparent, but how does that allow you to gain, you know, there's such a huge, like you said, ocean of material out there. How are you accessing it and using it to build your theories from?
Well, I access it in small in small pokes, so to speak. eBay will sell you data, I believe. I haven't actually bought it from eBay, but they will sell you data, and they realize the value of their data. But I'm not, you know, and it's anonymized in appropriate ways, I believe. But in fact, you can ping the eBay site with your own scripts and so on. You know, as long as you don't interfere, as long as you're sure not to interfere with their business, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. And I have the students in my class do projects where they download data, but I always warn them, you know, just, you know, one a minute or one every 5 minutes. Don't be a pig.
Yeah.
And So the data is there for collecting, and it's a matter of being of treading lightly enough so as not to really cause any problem at the other end. And of course, the most interesting part of the behavior in eBay we haven't even mentioned yet, which is sniping. A lot of people feel very strongly about that. This is of course bidding at the last few seconds in order, in fact, to avoid provoking anybody into a war.
Yes.
So generally speaking, of course, the strategy is always, you know, the buyer tries to decrease competition, the seller tries to increase competition. So,
yep.
Sniping is something that I think on in the long run is a very good strategy, and most experienced eBayers do snipe. And in fact, as I'm sure you know, there are services that snipe and software that will snipe yep. for you and so on. eSnipe is a good example.
Yeah, I don't think anyone who's gone on eBay, you know, and bought more than one or two items has not run into and probably been frustrated by if they follow eBay's, you know, instructions on how to effectively bid, has not been frustrated by the fact that they bid as, you know, an honest and open bidder and put in their value, you know, highest value early on in the process and think that they've won until at the very, very last second someone pops in with a bid that's, you know, 2 cents higher than what their what their top bid would have been.
Yeah, it appears to be 2 cents higher, but of course you never know what the real highest bid is. That's one of the beauties of eBay.
Yes.
You know, beginners say, oh, well, the guy won for a dollar more, but of course his bid was reduced to just above yours. So you never really know what the highest bid is. And having that highest bid secret and never revealed it to the seller, for example, is an important third-party function of eBay. What's interesting also is this: if everybody snipes, then the eBay would reduce to a sealed bid, second price auction, a la Vickrey. It's all worked out in 1961. So there's nothing catastrophic going to happen if everybody snipes. You simply put in your, you know, in fact, the theoretical construct is that you put in your theoretical highest value, and the person with the highest value gets it, and so on. It has also very nice properties. So it's not a catastrophe if everybody snipes, except eBay really wants to give you the illusion of being in a live outcry auction with lots of wars and action.
Well, it's far more exciting, of course, to be involved in that sort of an auction as opposed to a Vickrey auction or any type of sealed bid auction where you ship off your bid and then sit back and wait.
Exactly, and mail bid sales, which is, you know, a lot of these sales were conducted by mail in the old days before the internet, and they're essentially, when dealers would do mail bid sales, it'd be essentially sealed bid second price auctions, and they'd be run that way. Much to the credit of these, coin dealers working at a garage, is they did have second price auctions and they did run Vickrey auctions.
Mm-hmm.
But eBay treads the line. They don't lie to you. They don't say, it's in your interest to bid early. But they say, relax, bid early. So they kind of want their cake and eat it too.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting game because people do bid early, you know, all the time. And I always sit and wonder, well, why are these people bidding early? You know, even experienced bidders.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, of course, there's an alternative theory, and this all goes back to behavior, and all, you know, economics is behavior. The alternative theory is that by bidding very high early on, that somehow you'll scare people off. And I suppose in some situations, when your high bid actually shows as a high bid, that might actually be true, but... So there's the counter argument.
Yeah. Well, and of course, the problem with the eBay model as regards that is that no matter how high your bid is, it doesn't show as a high bid until people start doing that what we talked about, dipping the toe in the water thing and trying to figure out what the limits or extent of your bid is.
Well, I've seen that with high demand items where people have put a big bid up front to and it's effective. It can be very effective if people are trolling for. A bargain, if they see a high price, a bid jump very high on an item, it does tend to scare people off.
It's true. The question is whether they would have been, whether they would have dropped out anyway at the level that scares them. Would they have dropped out anyway? But these are deep questions. I mean, this has to do with the interaction between the mathematical theory and people's actual behavior, and that's the name of the game. And it's very hard, and I say I think economists are learning as much from eBay certainly now as eBay is ever going to learn more from economists. So
and you mentioned it just briefly in the book, but I think it's a really interesting topic to say that we are learning a lot. Economists and statisticians and so on are learning a lot about auctions and about the expected results of auctions, both for the buyer and for the seller. And do you think that we're getting something that we can learn from and apply to the sort of community good auctions, auctions that are designed for the public good, such as, broadcast frequencies and how those are being auctioned off and so on? Are those lessons being applied, do you feel, or could they be applied more effectively?
Absolutely. You've just, alluded to a very large area of very important research. People like Milgram have essentially instructed the government how to run FCC spectrum auctions and so on. Mm-hmm. These are interesting kinds of auctions. They're often multi-commodity or multi-item auctions. That is, you sell 20 spots of spectrum at the same time, or you sell securities, 20 shares or... there are many things where there you have many instances of something, and the theory of those auctions is more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a big literature on that, and there's a lot known about it, and certainly all these theories inform people about how to behave. And in fact, the early auctions, the early advice on how to design multi-item auctions was not exactly correct. It was misguided because they got the multi-item analogy to the Vickrey auction wrong, and they had to correct that. And there's some very nice work in multi-item auctions.
And of course, you know, Milgram, you mentioned Milgram and Weber, best known for their honesty is the best policy advice to sellers in, you know, in these types of auctions. And that seems to bear out with the eBay experience. And certainly when we're talking about public good auctions, I think it would be more difficult to not have an open and honest policy for you know, for an auction of that sort, as we talked about, you know, the frequency sales and so on. Does any other work seem to lose its reality or lose its effectiveness as the auction houses grow in size, you know, as eBay takes over and is a much, much larger area, or does that still seem to hold true?
No, I think that the principle of revealing all your information and so on as being best in the long run is should be applied with caution, but it's a general principle that people know from business in general. You want to engender trust and have repeat customers, and so you want to have a lot of credibility. So, you know, there are a lot of reasons to be honest when you're a seller and a buyer in almost any business transaction. And I think the more business that's conducted online, unless it's sort of one-shot bandit kind of thing, the more business is conducted, the more people learn that honesty is a good policy. So I view that as a very positive direction. I think there's honesty. Craig will tell you this, right, that there's a lot of honesty sort of develops naturally on the Internet, and a lot of cooperation, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think generally, you know, people want to be trusted and people want to be respected, and, you know, that holds true on eBay. eBay has, of course, that interesting, seller rating and buyer rating, where you can rate your experience with a seller or buyer. And, you know, that I think, and you talk about it a little bit as well, is that affects the value that you're willing to attach to an item. So it is, you know, in the long run, good for a seller to have a high rating because
sure.
that raises the value,
sure.
You know, value of their items
sure.
that they sell.
Sure, there's a term paper, you know, find out a correlation between seller, you know, seller's feedback and prices realized for the same item. You know, you can show that there's a correlation and...
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of studies that are done. There's a dark side to eBay, which is sometimes more interesting to discuss than the bright side. In any human activity like this, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on. I just, in the middle of a discussion with a friend about shill bidding, and there are so many ethical problems that come up in eBay, and so many ethical problems that are sort of borderline ethical problems.
Mm-hmm.
If you see somebody who may be a shill, are you obligated to report it? Well, you can never prove that somebody's shill bidding. Shill bidding, of course, is when a seller has an agent or in fact, the seller himself bids in his own auction to up the price.
Yes.
So it's a complicated story in big auction houses like Sotheby's, Christie's, and so on. There's usually a reserve there's usually a secret reserve in a book, essentially, that the auctioneer has. And it's considered okay, I think, generally, for the house to take bids off the wall, as it's called. That is, invent bids, as long as you're below the reserve.
Yeah, or off the chandelier.
yeah, right. But when you're over the reserve, it's beginning to translate into the same person who's going to buy it spending more than he would have otherwise instead of not buying it versus buying. So there's a subtle line to cross there, and one can argue about the ethics of that. But in the field that I'm particularly interested in, sort of you know, bronze coins for $10, $20, $30, $40 that are dug up from the ground in what is now maybe Lebanon or Iraq or Iran. The question is, there are laws about exporting artifacts Sometimes governments have tried to interfere with the shipping, sometimes not. If you buy it from somebody in Germany, well, you know, ultimately it came from the source, maybe Turkey or whatever. So there are all kinds of ethical, moral considerations here. Archaeologists and tend to be on these opposite side of collectors in these arguments, as you might imagine. And of course, they were just downright bandits in any business situation. But yeah. By and large, you know, people are honest. We see that often.
Well, now, one thing that may affect that, of course, is the internet in general, and then the advent of eBay itself. Of course, just changed the entire face of auctioning and buying and selling things on the internet. And I think we're coming to another change in that situation, in that we've got a whole generation of people that are used to the ubiquitous access that their cell phone gives them, that instant messaging and texting and et cetera gives them. And we're starting to see more and more applications come through. And of course, the iPhone and all this brings it really to the, really clear to everyone, is that you can have your real-time access to information and real-time access to sites like eBay or wherever, no matter where you are. Do you think that is going to create an environment where you could have, more of a true English outcry type auction, where you would have just, hey, I'm putting this up, and when the bidding stops, we're done, and do that, because people wouldn't have to, just be sitting at their computer bidding and bidding and bidding. They could be out wherever they are, and every time a bid beats their bid, they can, click in and add $5 or whatever and go with that. Do you think that's possible or is going to happen?
I'm not sure whether that's a nightmare scenario or not, working around all day bidding. There's always the convenience, I suppose, of not having to watch your cell phone or your iPhone screen.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true that this instant access to purchase and so on of commodity items, toothpaste. It's changed a lot. I don't know if people buy toothpaste online. I was talking with somebody who said that he can't remember the last time he's been in a store, and huh. It's kind of struck me. He says, well, that's true. You could buy everything you need without going in the store. Now,
yeah.
Of course, his wife, in this case, his wife goes food shopping, but
but you can do food shopping online. You can do your clothes. The thing that I have a problem with isn't so much the food shopping, because pretty much what you're going to get, but shopping for shoes and and shirts.
Sure. I think there'll always be a place for somebody there'll be a service industry, but it is, of course, it's having a dramatic effect on what's sold. I'm not so sure what effect it will have on auctions, because there's still the question of timing bidding. The eBay has a hard deadline now. There have been internet auctions like Amazon who extended the deadline until the bidding stopped in an attempt to.
Oh my.
But they I think Yahoo recently just closed down their. I don't know whether it was Yahoo or Amazon, but this has not been a successful model for auctions. There's something about the hard line, the hard deadline of ending in eBay that's very satisfying somehow to the, especially to the buyer, and the buyer knows that at that moment the issue will be decided.
Yeah. Well, now eBay, it's interesting you mentioned Amazon, because eBay has just come out with a number of new options that make it more Amazon-like, because they've been losing market share in the growing e-commerce industry to Amazon. Amazon's been growing at about 30% per year. The e-commerce industry as a whole is said to grow at about 20%, and eBay's only been growing at maybe around 10%. So, you know, I don't know if that's going to lead to kind of a merger of those policies or, you know, expand some of the options that you have of purchasing things on eBay.
Well, for sure, there are ways on eBay which are very much retail like. I mean, there're fixed price sales and there's stores and so on. Mm-hmm. And you're right, I think they've tried to cover themselves in that regard. But to me, I always try to make a distinction between these one of a kind odd collectibles and the commodity items. The things that you can get in the usual in a Walmart and Target and so on anyway.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about collectibles of any kind, you know, serious or frivolous or spoons with states on them or paperweights or whatever.
Or now the most recent thing I heard about was Michael Vick trading cards that have been chewed on by your dog.
Oh, no.
And I heard some of those were going for $400 or $500 a piece. And of course, these are, you know, 75-cent items, basically.
Oh, wow.
The hacked iPhone is on eBay right now, though.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
It's getting a nice
I'm sorry,
price.
I didn't hear that. What's on eBay right now?
The hacked iPhone. The iPhone opened up so that you can use it on carriers other than AT&T.
Right. That's a hot item. I see. Yeah. Okay. there are a lot of jokes down that down that particular avenue, but I don't want to travel there. I do make this distinction. There's a passion involved, you know, in putting a price on something that's one of a kind. It's an interesting economic sort of concept, you know. How can you determine the price? How is the price determined by of something that's unique? It's, you know, a lot of the coins that are dug up are not particularly attractive and they're not particularly valuable in some inherent sense. They're not gold or silver. They're just sort of cruddy bronze, and most people wouldn't bother picking them up in the street. But the price is really determined by supply and demand and nothing else. I mean, it's really what somebody will pay for it, and there's just sort of no intrinsic value at all to some crummy thing. Or some Pez dispenser, as it originally started out.
Yeah.
So it's sort of an ideal world of passion, you know. It's the passion of collectors that really interests me a lot. I don't care too much about the few percent difference in what you can buy, the usual, if you want to buy a memory stick here or a memory stick there.
Yeah. That is a good point, is that there is that, switch between the, you know, like you said, the standard item you can buy at Walmart or whatever versus the collectibles and all that. You know what, we're gonna have to start closing up here soon, but to pull some real basic advice. Now, I would recommend to the listeners, you know, for more information, they're going to want to read the book, Snipers, Shills, and Sharks, by Ken Stieglitz. Excellent book, but to pull some real basic advice out, as a buyer, would you say your best strategy on eBay is to not bid early, but to try and snipe, and either using a sniping service or your own sniping capabilities? Is that a true statement, or am I missing a big chunk here?
Well, there's two parts to the answer. One, the first part is yes, snipe, and that's what I do and what I recommend. And the second part is you have to be very careful in whether you claim that that's a mathematically provable statement, because you're dealing with people's behavior. And there are scenarios where maybe that might not be the best thing to do, and so on. And there is a risk in using a sniping service, because you're giving somebody else access to your account and so on. But yes, in general, I think if you want to decrease competition, which is the name of the game, you should snipe. From the point of view of a seller, you want to increase competition. So give a lot of information, high-quality pictures, low opening bid, no secret reserve. Do everything you can to sucker in bidders. So it's really, there's the line drawn in the sand.
Yeah, and I think, you know, back to Milgram and Weber, you know, honesty is the best policy. As much disclosure as you can is going to give people more sense of security, and
want to buy your product on eBay. Now, you have mentioned, too, in an email to me that you have done research on digital signal processing and things like that. So we may have some things to discuss at a later date as well. But I just wanted to let listeners know about that, that that if they're interested in any of these topics, they can look up Professor Stieglitz and see what's going on. Particularly, though, the Sniper Shills and Sharks, as you can tell, I've enjoyed the book a lot. I got a lot of extremely interesting and useful information out of it. I thought it was a very approachable book. It was just technical and dense enough that you knew there was some good stuff going on. But if you didn't want to get hung up in all the math, you could leave the appendices to the back of the book and and kind of ignore them and get the sense of what was happening anyways. So
that was my intention. Thanks very much.
Yeah, well, thank you, sir. We really appreciated having you on air, and I hope that you have a great weekend, and we'll be looking forward to maybe speaking with you again soon, and keeping an eye out for the next big thing that you're working on.
Thanks very much. It's been a pleasure.
Okay. Professor, we've really enjoyed having you on the show.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care.